host Annie Watson, and welcome back, or welcome, to R is for Rare. This week's interview is with Joey Such on Instagram. His last name is Suchonic, but he just says, call me Joey Such. He's at Joey Such on Instagram, and I believe also on YouTube, and he has a ultra-rare genetic disorder called FOP. FOP is an acronym for Fibrodysplasia Ossificans Progressiva. So you can understand why people call it FOP, because I would hate to say those three words every single time I explain myself. But FOP is very, very rare. I think in the episode, Joey kind of puts it into perspective about how many people have it, so I won't spoil that. But FOP is a rare disease where your muscles, your ligaments, and your tendons all turn into bone at some point in your life. And it's that happens through different flares in your body. And Joey was diagnosed at a pretty young age, and it was kind of through a process of elimination, as he'll explain. But he basically, at this point now, he's in his late 20s. Now that he's in his late 20s, he's lost almost all of his mobility. He still has about 5% of mobility left. But he's pretty reliant on a feeding tube, so he can't eat or drink normally. He has a monitor stand because he has neck issues. If he didn't, he does a lot of adaptable things for his life. He's currently living in Manhattan, and he wants to become an influencer, which I think is kind of cool. I also have basically grown up with social media, at least my peers and I have. But he currently has about 1,000 followers on Instagram. He just put up one of his first vlogs on YouTube, and I will be featured on his podcast, Two Mics, One Joey Such, in the near future. But his first episode just came out with Emily Hall, who I interviewed as well. But Joey and I talk a lot about beauty standards with social media in the back half of this episode. We talk about his diagnosis story. As always, I love to know the roots of a person's rare disease and just how he adapts his life from just now or when he was growing up and in college. So he goes a lot into those details because adaptability is key with some of these rare diseases, especially FOP. So I'm very excited for you guys to listen to Joey's story. Be sure to subscribe to R is for Rare on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure to follow me on Instagram at R is for Rare Podcast, and that's how you'll know about, usual episode updates. You'll find fun reels on there, as well as my episode with Joey Such. I'll post a lot about that as well. Without further ado, let's get into the episode. Hi, Joey. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. So, Joey, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you're doing with your life right now, what rare disease you have, and a fun fact about yourself.
I'm not ready for the questions. I'm Joey Such. I'm 28 years old. I live in New York City. I have a rare disease called FOP, where my muscle tendons and ligaments turn into bones, literally. So throughout my life, my body's been getting worse, and I lost 95% of my movement right now. And a fun fact, there's nothing fun about me.
Oh, stop it. There probably is.
I have to get back to you on that one. I can't think of anything right now.
Oh, okay.
I'll say I'm a really good cook.
Ooh, what's your favorite thing you cook?
I cook amazing crepes.
Ooh, crepes sound really good right now. Crepes are once you perfect crepes, you've perfected making breakfast food. So it's the hardest breakfast food to make.
Yeah, I would make crepes, and then I would cook strawberries and sugar on the side and put them together with some ice cream.
Sounds Ooh. So good. Sounds it's so good.
Yeah, I perfected it a nice golden brown. Yes. If my family wants crepes, they don't even try to cook it and make me do it.
Hey, that's a good thing. It's a good thing. You've reached good status in the crepe making.
My parents had these pans, and the results weren't coming out great. So I had to buy my own pan just for crepes.
Nice. I've heard that that's a thing, and I've never seen one before, I don't think. But I've heard.
I just bought a non-stick pan from Amazon.
Oh, okay.
And that was good enough. Like, I don't like the real crepes are the one where it's like a flat cooking service, and then they have like the little spatula.
Yeah,
I don't do that. It's like more like a pancake mix, and I just feel like it's layer. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Now I want crepes. So what does FOP stand for?
It stands for fibrodysplasia ossificans progressiva.
Okay. And so you said it turns your ligaments and your bones and your tendons, or not your bones, your muscles and your tendons into bone?
Yes.
Okay. And can you tell us a little bit about your diagnosis story?
Sure. So I had my disease since birth. It's a genetic disease. I was born with it. It doesn't run in my family, so it's just unexplainable. When I was first born, I had this bump on my head, and they thought it was some tumor or something, and it didn't look proper at all. So, like, the doctor just removed it, like, just not knowing. Just, like, it's ugly, get rid of it. So, that was fine. Like, not something you want to hear from a doctor when, I wasn't there to make the decision, but the parent didn't want to, like, hear that. Oh, I had to get surgery right away.
Yeah.
So that was fine. So I got the surgery. That went fine. And I was growing up. And then growing to like 4 years, I keep getting these bumps on my body. And now they're called flares. So these bumps would come on my body, all over my body. And the weird thing is that it would sometimes be warm. Sometimes it wouldn't. Sometimes it'd be red. Sometimes it wouldn't. But another weird thing is that they would start happening, but then they wouldn't move. Or they would just disappear in a couple of days. And it was very weird and unexplainable. So I have these flares, and then I would make an appointment. And by the time the appointment came, the flare moved, or it would disappear. And then it's like unexplainable circumstances. But the thing is, like, nothing would happen from it, or at least nothing apparent. So like one of the things the doctor said, I might have a cancer, and to like do chemo to get rid of it, because it was kind of like a process of elimination of like the symptoms I was having and such. But like otherwise I was like completely fine. My blood results came out perfectly normal. I had a you know where they take part of your skin and like send it out.
When you have a mole and they like chop it off and they send it off to a lab, that type of thing.
I forgot what we call it, but yeah, they like take a part of your skin and like study it.
Skin graft.
Yeah. So they took that, like it came out completely normal. So they couldn't explain it. So they thought I had some weird cancer and I had to get chemo. The day I was supposed to get chemo, I got chickenpox, and so that stopped me from getting chemo. And a little while later, I guess, the symptoms weren't matching the cancer that they diagnosed me. And so what my dad did was go, so this was in the early 90s. So this was before like the internet was becoming what it is now.
Okay.
So like my dad would go to the bookstore and just look up symptoms for different diseases. And it turned out my symptoms were matching the disease I have now. And a big indicator are the malformed toes. And what's weird is that I had them since birth, and no one really thought twice about it. They just, first they wanted to fix them because they were malformed toes, but it wasn't a surgery worth pursuing because it didn't look like it was gonna affect anything in terms of walking. It was just more of a cosmetic. So my parents didn't think twice about it, and they never did a surgery. So my dad found like the big indicator of the FOP is the malformed toes. So you're like, huh? So that seems like I want to say there's really like, let's say 99% of other diseases doesn't have malformed toes. So like it was pretty exact. So and then we went to a geneticist, and then the geneticist confirmed it, and then we went to really the only doctor in the world that was studying it at the time, named Dr. Fred Kaplan, and he officially diagnosed me around the age of four.
Okay. And how did you have to adapt to, I mean, childhood and teenage years, and then obviously adult life, having this rare disease?
What's weird about my disease is that, for one, the disease progresses differently in every single person.
Okay.
And so, like, so what I'm like in the middle of, in terms of, like luckiness, because the extreme cases are that you lose the ability to walk when you're like 8 years old, and like it really progresses to the point where like you're bed bound and can't get out of bed at all and such. Just being in a wheelchair is really difficult. But for me, I was in the medium lucky because I was able to walk and run and have full movement on my lower half till I was 18 years old. So like I never needed a wheelchair. I was independent all the way to college. Like I didn't need help literally anything, like had no modifications done or anything. And then the extremely lucky people that have my disease, they don't get affected at all until they're like 20 years old. But what did was affected were my arms, my shoulders and elbows. And so like I was around like 6 to 8 where they locked into place. So my left arm is stuck in a broken arm position just because that's how it is. And then my right arm is, everyone's listening to this, but I can't move my right arm at all. So it's always, so I'll explain it to the audience that are listening. So I can only put my right arm, I can only touch my left shoulder, and I only can touch to the tip of my nose, but I can't move it anyplace else.
Okay, go ahead.
And the body just wants, this body decides that whatever position it wants to be in. So there are people where their arms are locked to the sides of their body and they can't lift them up to like touch their face at all.
Okay. And how do you, are you like, this sounds really, really weird, and I apologize if this sounds offensive, but are you like, quote unquote, like content with where your arm's locked into place, or like, is it working for you, or do you wish that, I really hope this doesn't sound offensive, but do you wish that they had locked into place in a different way? Like, how do you feel with how your arm's locked into place now?
My left arm, I think, is useless. It's just useless. I can't really do anything with it. My right arm, I think, is in the best position possible, in terms of just like be able to feed myself and like drink and to do somewhat of that, and to be able to write and such. I think it's like, I guess I got lucky in that aspect that I was able, that my arm locked in the position that I was in. I can definitely see other people have way more problems with the way their arms are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hope that I didn't offend you or anything. I mean, but
no one ever asked me that question, so it's interesting to think of a answer.
Yeah. And how are you able to approach like food and drink and stuff like that? Are you able to approach that better since of the way that your arm's locked into place? Like, how do you approach like feeding and drinking?
Well, it's like, you don't know, like to the listener that's happening, we actually did a whole interview on my podcast, Two Mics, One Joey Stews. But what you don't know is that I actually can't eat food anymore.
Oh, really?
I haven't been able to eat food for the past 4 to 5 years now.
Okay. So do you have like a feeding tube or?
Yeah, I have a feeding tube now. So. Yeah, so I physically can't be myself anymore with the way my arms are locked. So like now I'm really like, I can't do anything in terms of like just staying alive. But when I did eat and such, it was really not a problem at all, because when I was younger, I had my arms were locked, but I still had my hips. So I was able to like bend over, and the way my arm is frozen, I was able to bend in a way to like grab the fork and eat and such. And like I would, you know, I was able to like do it literally like 90% of like everyday activities, even in college. Like I went to college solo, as in I was able to take care of myself completely, like cook my own food, you know, go to the bathroom, shower. I was literally independent all the way through. Like my college was 2 hours away from my parents. So I was relying on myself. I'll never go into a situation where like I'm not comfortable with it, but like I was comfortable enough to like go to college and like be able to take care of myself.
Mm-hmm. And was that how was the like family dynamic growing up with a rare disease? Because I know it's different for everybody, and it depends on parent situation and if you have siblings or not. Like, how was the family dynamic with growing up with FOP?
Well, for me, it was, my parents didn't really tell me what I had actually, because I don't know, they didn't tell me. I think for one reason is that the future is very bleak for everyone. Like, no matter how lucky you are, you're still deeply affected by everything. Like, most people are like in a wheelchair at the age of 20. I know that's like not something you want to tell a child at all. And like, so I never really, I never really met with anyone that had my disease at all. Maybe just like one, like we have a great network that you can connect with, but my parents were really never into that, any of that stuff. And just, I didn't really like know about it. I just like knew I was different and my body was going through, but I didn't really have like a reason for it.
Oh, okay.
And like, they didn't tell me. Like, we would go to the doctor and they would like tell me, but like, I was never like specifically told it, but at the same time also like pretty stubborn, because what my condition is that I really can't get hurt, because getting hurt will cause a flare, and a flare will start the bone growing process.
Okay.
So I'm not supposed to be getting hurt. Or what's weird, but what's weird about the disease is that I could fall down like the stairs 20 times and nothing could happen. But I could fall on the 21st time and something could happen.
Interesting.
Or it could be the first time I fall down the stairs and something happens. Like, there are people that have been in a car crash and it came out completely fine. And then, like, in my case, it's like 90% of my flares, I just woke up with them. Like, nothing.
Oh, okay.
Like, nothing even triggered it or anything. So it's very weird. No one knows why they start. One is that you do inflict a lot of muscle damage to it. So, like, I can't get any shots.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Interesting.
So I can't get any flu shots or anything like that. I can only get it subcutaneously.
Okay.
I can get tattooed just fine, weirdly enough. I can get piercings fine, too, oddly enough. I can't get the COVID vaccine.
Okay. And how did you feel knowing that, like, when the vaccines were approved, and there's so far there hasn't been conversation of an option for people who can't get shots? How does that feel?
Well, I was like, people that have my disease actually got it already and they didn't have any problems, but there's still a risk involved in it.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting you asked that, because there was a wedding that I went to 2 days ago. And at first, like, all wedding they planned like a year ahead. And she had to postpone it for obvious reasons. And so like when she planned the day again, the New York law was, you can have events of more than like 20 or whatever number, but everyone has to be vaccinated or show proof that you have a negative test. So like my option was I would get the shot, because you know there's a lot of other places I want to go, and like a lot of places require to get a shot. Like, if you want to go to a baseball game, you have to prove you're vaccinated or they won't even let you in. So like committed to getting the shot. And then like And I thought of the risk, and I didn't want to risk it. So I was planning to get the negative shot. I mean, the negative test done. Obviously, it would be negative, hopefully. And then like, the law lifted. So, like, there were no restrictions at all. So I just tested her, like, hey, do we need to be tested? And she was like, no. So that's fine. And
that's
then
the other, nice.
Yeah, so that's, it worked well in my favor, but there's still the risk of other people. But what's nice is that people are getting the vaccine, so it's helping me out. I mean, they're always going to be those people that are anti-vax and such. And I think it's dumb. Like, I can't get it just for medical reasons, but I'm just happy that everyone else is taking it, so it gives me less risk. But I will still be cautious if I go. I was cautious, but like now I just like don't care anymore. But like I still go out doing whatever. Like I don't wear a mask or anything.
Okay. Yeah. And I knew that like more urban areas, like the suburbs aren't bad. And for most major cities, but like the major cities like Chicago and New York were really strict. So I didn't know like how that worked, but yeah, if you can get vaccinated, if for all my listeners, if you are able to, or you haven't already, consider getting vaccinated because it's going to lead to a somewhat dialed down COVID-19 world where restrictions don't have to be too much of a problem, but also be considerate of those people who would like you to wear a mask. But because I know some people still have, like, it's a huge thing in the rare disease and disability community where it's like I was interviewing one of my past interviews was someone who has Ehlers-Danlos, and she said I quarantined a year before everybody else did because I have conditions that are undiagnosed and I don't know what could happen if I went outside and risked it. So I just be cautious if you need to, and just tell my listeners out there, just be aware of the situation you're getting yourself into. And I know with schools it's different, but it's been interesting learning about the vaccination and the COVID side of these interviews I've done, because again, one of the other interviews I did, the way her rare disease worked, she got the first shot, but she has a rare disease of her spinal fluid and it messed up her levels so badly that she can't get the second shot. So especially in the rare disease community, like I've seen it's kind of hard to adapt, and I hope these bigger companies like Pfizer and J&J, which apparently J&J also can link to a rare disease in very, very minor circumstances. Like they just released a warning yesterday that there were like single digit reports of the like millions of vaccines that they've gotten, that there's a slight possibility you can get this rare nerve infection. But again, it's a very, they have to list it for FDA guidelines, like any clinical trial, you have to list every single side effect. That's why drug commercials are so long. It's because they have to list every single side effect. Even if one person got it of 1,000 people, they have to list it. But yeah, apparently like that happened. And I saw rare nerve disease in like the scroll through of the news, and it said J&J could possibly lead to this, and I saw rare disease and my interest was piqued. But yes, do your research before you get vaccinated. Yeah. If you can get vaccinated, you can't, just be considerate of your situation.
Yeah, I'm just be smart about this situation, about it. Like in the beginning when like the all the listings were lit, all the like locked up would be lifted, I didn't go out yet. I waited for everyone to get a vaccine, and they were literally like, we'll give you free donuts and free beer to get vaccinated. Like they really wanted to like push this. Like go get your free Krispy Kreme donuts. Like
the onion, the like fake opinion, like the onion, it's like a fake news outlet. They they came out with that article where it was like, if you can prove you're vaccinated, you can go through the Krispy Kreme conveyor belt and get glazed by the Krispy Kreme.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
It went viral because people thought it was real. But but it's the onion, so it's fake. Although it does sound kind of nice. I haven't had Krispy Kreme since I was little, so I could use some Krispy Kreme right now.
I don't think there's one even in the city. I don't even know if I had a Krispy Kreme donut, to think of it.
Huh. Yeah, there was one by my house, and then it closed, like, right after we moved here. And I thought it went out of business, but they just closed the one by my house. And I haven't, there's, like, not, the closest one's a state over, so.
Yeah, I didn't ever, like, came across a Krispy Kreme. Or maybe I have, but I never was like, hey, I want to get a donut.
Interesting. Yeah. From my experience of being in Manhattan, I've never seen a Krispy Kreme, but maybe I'm just looking in the wrong parts of Manhattan.
To all the listeners, Annie's a huge Dunkin' Donuts fan.
Yeah, Dunkin' Donuts is the coffee. Just if you're getting basic coffee, Dunkin' is better.
Yeah. Well, I did want to say that I'm actually neighbors with a Dunkin' Donuts right now.
Wait, really?
Yeah, I'm literally neighbors with them.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah, they're to my right.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Yeah, I love that.
So my room smells like coffee every day.
Oh, that's kind of nice. That's not a bad thing. Coffee's a good smell. Anyways, Joey, what are some of the ways in your everyday life that you adapt with FOP? Like, what are some everyday examples you could give us on how you have to adapt to living with FOP?
So my life is basically that I need help with literally like everything. Like I lost 95% of the movement, so I can't walk at all. I mean, I can take a couple of steps, but I need assistance to take a couple of steps. You know, if I want to eat, I need someone to come and feed me. And if I need to go to the bathroom, someone has to come and help me go to the bathroom. I can't go on my own. So I'm kind of like reliant on someone to do everything. So the modification is like a walk-in shower. So there's no like steps. Like the toilet is higher. Well, another thing is that now I'm okay, but like when I sit in a regular chair, I can't put my neck down. And so like my monitor is much higher up, so I can like look at it comfortably. I would say it's like 7 feet off the ground.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
It's like, I feel like there's so many nuanced ways that rare disease patients live their lives. So I'm always intrigued when people share that kind of like how they adapt. So
yeah, well, FOP is very, your life can literally change like overnight. Mm-hmm. So like if you go from like a position where like I was able to walk everywhere, and then now that you're in a chair, you know, like you can't, I mean, I guess you can, but you can't really just go to a store and get a wheelchair. It's kind of a process.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is that an FOP body, when you're having a flare, especially in the hips, it changes so much about you in terms of position of being comfortableness that like sometimes just sitting is not comfortable at all. And a lot of the time they're just stuck in bed for a year to 2 years until the flare subsides, and then they can get more comfortable, and then a lot of them have to be fitted for a wheelchair specifically for them and how comfortable they are, because a lot of them can sit upright, just the way their body is frozen over. You know, some have to be more lean back or put in a different position where they can stand up easier or just be more comfortable. Because what also unfortunate is that bones grow, but they grow and sharp. They grow sharply at times. So like my skin is not smooth. Like sometimes there'll be like some bones pointing out, and that can prove to be uncomfortableness. And the other thing is it grows inside of the body that you necessarily don't see, and it kind of affects like your lungs, heart, you know, stomach, neck, everything.
It's interesting. Can you give us a little bit of a perspective as to how rare FOP is?
There's only 800 to 1,000 cases in the world.
Wow.
I think there's an ultra rare category. Mm-hmm. So it's like ultra rare.
Okay. And have you, are you, have you met anybody that also has FOP?
I know a couple of them through the internet. I did meet a couple in person, but we never like hit it off to have like a good relationship in a way, but we know of each other. And like, what's great about the FOP community is that everyone knows of each other. So like, if you knew someone that had my disease, there's a high probability I know who that person is, mm-hmm. and there's some connection to it.
Yeah, kind of like the small town mentality where everybody yeah. knows everybody.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. It's always, again, like I said, it's kind of cool to see the nuances of the different rare diseases.
I feel like our disease is lucky in terms of community because I don't know about your disease, but my disease, like most rare diseases, like most companies don't want to do research on a disease if it's rare because it doesn't like affect enough people to invest like thousands of dollars into it. Mm-hmm. So like we got lucky in terms of, I guess, the families that all these people are raising so much money for FOP to find a cure, that sometimes you'll see other diseases and they're like very like, not a lot of effort goes into it, very little funding, not that much interest, no get-togethers, nothing like that. And then you have this really small group that's 800 people and then plus their families, they're like really coming together to like raise millions of dollars per year.
Oh, wow.
It's actually a lot of millions of, I mean, it takes millions of dollars to do research, but it's really impressive that all the money is being raised just by families that most of them have no experience doing fundraising or anything like that, but they're putting together these events to raise money, and people have been raising millions of dollars per year, and it's really impressive.
That's really impressive.
Yeah, and other diseases can get nothing. I don't know like the like genetics and all that science thing, but like some diseases might be cured if they had a couple million dollars laying around and been research and it could be cured. But mm-hmm. since not enough money is being poured in, you know, they probably cannot find a cure, mm-hmm. or it would take a really, really long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know how it is with the, I know we have more cases than 800, at least in the US. I know that there's more than that, but I'm not quite sure how the funding is. Thankfully they're able to do like a meetup through the narcolepsy organization I'm a part of. But yeah, I'd be intrigued to see like what the fundraising efforts are like. I know they sponsor, they help like the network I'm a part of, Narcolepsy Network. They have somebody like run to fundraise either as a fundraiser or as like a sponsor for the New York Marathon every year, which I think is pretty interesting. But yeah, that's like as far into the finances that I know of. And there's multiple narcolepsy organizations, so I could be wrong.
I mean, in my community, like people are not like, people are just doing like a bingo. They just do a bingo, but like they host in these massive halls. But like they've been doing it for 15 years now, and they'll get like a couple thousand people just playing bingo.
Interesting.
Yeah, and Swan had like they've had a barbecue and they do that.
Mm-hmm.
And like they're not doing anything. I mean, it takes a lot of planning to do any fundraiser.
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
but bingo is very like simple in a way. But like they have to get the gift baskets and all that. So that's a lot more goes into it than just what I'm saying. But mm-hmm. These activities are just simple. Like Juan does a comedy show and he's been doing that for like 20 years. It's weird because it was a comedy show. He's been doing it for like 15 to 20 years. But I had no idea about the fundraiser onto college because my freshman year I'm moving in, as I was moving my stuff, the guy kept looking at me from like the hallway. And then like after like 5 minutes or so, he talked to the parents, not to me, but like, does your son have FOP? And we were like, yeah. Like, how do you know? Because it's so rare and stuff. And he was like, oh, I've been doing a fundraiser for the past 15 years about it.
That's crazy. That's so weird.
Yeah, so like he knew everything about it. And I met his son and everyone. And they've been doing it for 15 years. And I had no idea about it.
That's so, so crazy.
Yeah, so it's like a small world out there.
Yeah, and, small world.
Yeah, and then like another story like that is that one time I went to the Bahamas. And like I did put, it's weird because you're so much younger than me that you probably don't do it anymore. But like back when I was in high school, Facebook was humongous and you would post like everything on it.
Okay.
So like I did make a post like, hey, I'm going to the Bahamas, you know, like bragging, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So I like went to like, posted that. And then someone would FOP, like comment like, hey, where are you? And but like me not having internet or anything, I didn't know till after the trip. So they went on the hunt. So in the Bahamas is it's an island of resorts. So that weekend they were hunting for me on the island. Not hunting for me, they were like casually looking for me. Like we never met in person. So like we were in the main hotel and we were just walking by and then they found us. And then they're like, hey, nice to meet you guys. And then we like hung out for the next 2 days.
That's so interesting. What a small world.
Yeah, like we didn't plan it or anything and we hung out with them. And that was really cool.
The beauty of the internet.
Yeah.
We're going to take a little break and then we'll get back to the rest of the episode with Joey. And we are back. So, Joey, it's Disability Pride Month. The month of July is Disability Pride Month for my listeners who don't know. And your Instagram bio says disability and mental health advocate. And I know the lines between some rare diseases and identifying as a disabled person can be kind of blurred in some situations. So how do you want people to quote unquote celebrate Disability Pride Month? And what do you love about being in the rare disease disability community?
So that's like two pretty different questions.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer your second question, what's great about the rare disease community is that you don't have to explain yourself. Even if they don't have what you have, a lot of the symptoms are pretty much the same in terms of like, if you get tired often or such, like that's just normal for them and they understand you don't have to explain anything. Like you can just tell them, oh, I get tired often. They'll just say, okay. Mm-hmm. Like they wouldn't have to explain what a regular person is like. It wouldn't make sense if a young person is tired all the time. Like this is unheard of unless you have something. So, well, that's what's great about the rare community, that you rare disease community. I sound like we're Pokemons, but no, I mean, it's just great. Like you don't have to explain it. Just be like I would join rare disease Zooms. And like everyone has their own set of problems and like everyone's open and you don't have to explain yourself. Like let's say someone's going through a tough time. They don't have to explain their story at all. They just have to explain the symptoms and we can all relate to it in our own way and like help. So that's great. You don't have to explain it and have them understand it and ask questions. I think most of the time people like don't mind answering questions and all the time, but like, sometimes you just want to go into a room and just not have to explain it and just feel relaxed and such. And then what was your first question again?
How do you want people to view Disability Pride Month / celebrate it, whether they associate with the disability community or not? Like, how do you want people to approach it?
That's like a difficult question, kind of, because like, there's not much you can really do. I think like there are a lot of like hurdles in life in general and such. So like one hurdle would be like in New York City, like I mean a lot of places are wheelchair I wouldn't say it's wheelchair accessible, but sometimes it's difficult to still navigate, especially in New York City. You know, like the streets aren't as even or the curbs are not as like smooth and it's like rough. So like So, I mean, it would it be more? I think that more people have to be aware of the disabilities and such, and I think it works the other way too for the rare, for any disability to be more self-securing themselves, because like the world is their oyster and they kind of have to live with what they have and live with the obstacles around them, and they kind of have to do whatever they have to do to survive. And while yes, there's a lot of things that could be done in the outside world that could greatly benefit them, to like with the wheelchair, like in New York City, to have even streets and stuff. You know, it sucks when you someone pushing you in a wheelchair and like you're shaking all the time. Like, I love to film and stuff, but I can't film when I'm in a wheelchair because the street is so wobbly that the footage comes out wobbly. Like, just, I think like the big thing is being secure in yourself, because you don't have an option really. And like you live with yourself for the rest of your life. Most people will not get better at all in their lifetimes, whether they have what's weird about disability, that's such a huge range. So like if you have like a limb loss, you could kind of get an arm back or such. So the technology is improving a lot, that people are able to get arms now and able to grab something, like some amazing technological feat. So that's amazing. But like a lot of people won't have a cure for the disease. Like, I don't think I'll have it. I mean, I think I may have like a cure for my disease for like the younger generation, but like me personally, I don't think I will ever I'll be able to reverse the damages, or maybe I won't be able to reverse the damage as much as I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of okay. I mean, I'm okay with it, but like, I'm not okay that this is how my life's going to be for the rest of my life. And so I think the big thing is just to be self-secure in yourself. It's easier said than done. And like, I do still have my insecurities of, you know, going out in public and socializing. Like, I had that kind of insecurity when I went to a wedding to be social with people, just because, like, for one, I don't have like a loud voice, so it's hard to like talk across the table and such. And then the other thing is that you're in a wheelchair. It's difficult for me to navigate from like, you know, like person to person, and like meeting them at their level and such. So I'm kind of always just stuck in one spot and such, and it's more comforting to me. And sometimes it's just hard to be secure about your situation. You get so many things you want to change, and it takes a lot to be secure in yourself when you have a disability. And the more severe your disability is, the more you have to be secure with yourself to be like open and, you know, to go out in the world and, you know, meet people and have fun and deal with people looking at you and such. So you need like a lot of balls and self-security and kind of the confidence around you to live through life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you, again, like touching on what your Instagram bio says, you also have mental health advocates. So what has been your experience with the mental health aspect, just of life in general, but also as a rare disease patient? How has that looked for you?
For me, I don't really have much to lose anymore. Like, I don't really have many friends, so like I can understand if you're like surrounded by people that don't really have mental issues, or they don't understand it, and then you talk about suicide and it's like, okay, like people are going to get away from you because they don't want to talk about that. And so that's like one thing. So I don't really have anything to lose in terms of like losing friends. And then the other thing is, it's my experience, and I don't have like normal experiences of other things. So like people would normally get a job now and they would be working I don't know, like banking or stuff. So they would be like more knowledgeable in the banking things and all of that. I have like some knowledge about it, but I don't have, I mean, I can study it, like let's say watch a YouTube video, but that's the same as in like working in the business field and such and being taught by other people. But like I grew with suicide, like I know from firsthand experience about it and such. And then for me, like I love to like think about and ponder about like different opportunities and how does this person feel. And like I'm just always fascinated by like just understanding the how the mind works. So like I kind of combine that with I always love to be, I don't know, I would say to be on camera, but like being expressive on my opinion in a way. And I also kind of have a knack for, you know, video editing and storytelling. So I was just like, hey, I want to make videos again. And like, what do I talk about? And like, a big thing about YouTube is that you need a niche to start with. So like, what do I know the most? You know, I have a rare disease that most people will probably never ever experience due to how rare it is. And then the mental part that's much more common, especially today, as more people are getting diagnosed or aware of it and, you know, looking at themselves instead of just, you know, drinking and, you know, getting away from it somehow. So, yeah, so I was like, just, I don't have anything to lose. I'm not going to really, like, lose any friends. And I wanted to start staying true to myself. So I just started, like, all my videos are scripted. So I just started writing it, put it in a nice way to, like, express to the audience and hope someone can relate to it. But not everyone wants to talk about suicide or they want to talk about it, but not like on a deep level in any way, or they just won't talk about it to anyone except like the therapist or anything. So like, I didn't have anything to lose. So I just started like making videos and just talk about it. Like, it keeps me busy on the side too. So that's nice. And like, I have a creative, outlet that I need to release. And so that's my creative outlet to do. And like the another thing is that like when you're locked up at home and such, I don't really have a way to like meet new people and, you know, like learn new things. And so like the only way for someone to notice you if you start, you know, posting content or like a normal person, they will like go wow and like, you know, get a hobby or whatever. So I can't go out as freely as I want to. So like if I'm making a video, then that would hope to lead to something to meet like new people and awesome people and people that are in my area where I can relate to. And I don't know, just expand my group. And the thing is like, there's so many people out there that I haven't met before, but they have no way of knowing who I am if I never talk about it or post or anything like that. So like making a video has somehow led me to meeting you.
Yeah, like our connection to Emily Hall, who I interviewed, led you to DM me. And that's the power of the internet. Like I said before, like power of the internet is like, if you're like, you got to start somewhere. Like you said earlier when we were like talking off the record, like you gotta start somewhere. And whether you do a podcast or you post on Instagram or you have a Facebook group or whatever, like people won't know your feelings unless you say something. And I think that's powerful what you're doing.
Yeah, it's also very intimidating for one to like talk about it. That's like one thing. And then two is to release it to the public so everyone has access to it. And then I think the third thing is the reaction. You know, you could either get a positive, really positive or really negative, but you could also get no reaction either. So it's kind of more negative. It's more on the negative side than the positive side.
No reaction is the worst.
Yeah. Or it's like low views and then that can like hurt your self-esteem and such. But like what a lot of people don't realize, especially like the YouTube world and such, most people started from nowhere.
Yeah,
they started just with zero subscribers, zero view, and they just kept hustling for 2 or 3 years getting 10, 20 views, and then now they're these huge giants. But like, you didn't see them when they were first starting. You see them, you saw them like when they were like 75% of the way to where they are now.
Mm-hmm. Somebody goes viral somewhere. It just doesn't take it. Most yeah. people aren't viral from day one. Like, that's just, it's a very, very small percentage of YouTubers.
Yeah, it's very rare that someone goes viral and that launches their career. But like, a lot of these people are just, they slowly get their way up. Well, the other weird thing about like with YouTube is that even if you post something really awesome, YouTube had the power to post your content or remove it. Basically, like, they have a power to help you go viral. And if you only post one video, they're not going to like want to help you at all. But if you keep posting more in video and like see you that, oh, like the guy posting, let's start pushing your content more to more eyes. And then it's like a slow road to getting up there. So you just have to be consistent about it. And assuming that yeah, you're getting better by every single episode. Okay, I'm sure your first episode was really like bad or was okay. But like, you get better and better, and like your interview gets better, your video get better, your video content get better, your editing gets better. But you're building your stuff, your skill set too, and then once people start seeing you, they're not gonna see all the crappy videos you made in past. They're gonna see the way better video, but they don't know that it took you time to get there mm-hmm. to become this well-rounded person, YouTuber, podcast, whatever field you're in.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's if you're gonna power through it, people are gonna find you somehow. Like, that's how I felt with my podcast on Instagram. Is originally I only posted when every episode came out, and then I didn't notice any huge following. So with the help of my sister, I was able to kind of revamp it all, and now I feel like I'm posting somewhat consistently enough where it's not a huge following. Like, I'm not Instagram famous, but it's more than like, yeah, I'm not a high ranking. I'm not an A-list influencer in any sense of the word, like not even close.
You're like a D plus.
Probably like an H-list influencer, if that's a thing. Probably like H or I, but not quite D. We'll get there at some point. But
Did you just have a video that kind of went like 2,000 views or something?
I have a reel that I have a couple reels on Instagram at RS Rare Podcast that I have like a few thousand reels. One of them has 14,000, but only because the time between posting that one and then the next one was like a month. So I just let it rack up views because I didn't know what I wanted to do. But they're semi-viral. I did have one where it was the disability is not a bad word. That one, you get notifications when you reach like milestone view plays for reels. And I saw within like a half hour, I had 1,000 plays. I'm like,
what
is happening? Like, what is going on? I think it now has like a little over 3,000 or 4,000. It's been like a couple weeks since I posted that. But yeah, it's kind of weird, but hey, it's working. It's growing slowly but surely. So again, consistency with anything is key, whether you're wanting to pursue social media or even just like advocacy. Like, it's about consistency and it's about dedication and how willing are you to put yourself in that.
Like before I started like my own YouTube channel, like I would watch videos of like, how do you like make good content? That, and like one of the things someone said is that you have to like keep hustling even when things are not looking good, because you just have to do it. And
there have been times where I am exhausted and I delay my episode. Like, back in the spring, I was so busy with school and with extracurriculars, I was delaying my episodes. But now that I've been consistent since then, and I was consistent before, I've been able to schedule interviews and do this somewhat consistently. And I love it. I love what I do. I do it as a hobby. I know some people like you want to do it as a career. And I mean, a lot has to go down for this to become my career, but it would take a miracle for this to be like a disposable income career. But I'm not saying it's impossible. It would just take so much work. And we'll see how it goes.
I mean, you're a better person than I am. Just like me and Annie just did a interview people this month for my podcast, and she's my third guest, and I'm still have two other guests that have to edit because I'm still figuring out how to edit it properly to like a nice format.
That's and totally okay.
I mean it's okay because I actually never released one yet, but it's so bad that like I should be like starting to release and get into like a groove, but it's like not working right now, and it's like so bad.
You do you, whatever, however much time it takes you. It took, the only reason I didn't start my podcast sooner, because I came up with this idea right around this time last year. Only reason it took so long is because my mic was on back order. It's the only reason I started my podcast in January instead of like September 2020. But yeah, I am just, I just do it for fun because I love hearing these perspectives. And if things happen, yeah, things happen. If it turns into a career, so be it. If it doesn't, that's fine too. I'm in it more so for the experience and expanding my horizons than the paycheck, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I want to, but my main goal is I want to be verified.
That's cool. I can just say if that happens one day, I can say I was there before you were verified.
Yeah, that's all I want to do. Is that like what, like that's my goal. It's like, what do I have to do to get there? So like hoping that people like you in my interview and they want to like, you know, like 20 million people want to watch you.
That's a lot more than I could ever expect. But I mean, who knows?
It would be weird if like all my videos, like most of my videos are like 50 views. It would just be weird if it's like just our interview that got like 20 million.
And then it's like 50, 100, 75. And then it's just like, that would be a lot of, I don't know how I would deal with that. I always feel like very overwhelmed in a good way, when like those bigger milestones relatively happen, because I have to realize I'm not going to become an influencer overnight. It's hard work and I love it. But yeah, it's definitely a consistency thing, and it's helped me a lot. I don't know about you, but it's helped me a lot with knowing what's okay to say and what's not okay to say, and increasing my advocacy skills and my Instagramming skills. Like, it's all a learning curve.
Yeah, are we allowed to like get more into? Are we allowed to talk about the more like extreme ways to get viral? In terms of get like a big thing is that like if you show more skin, you'll get more followers and more likes. Or if you get like all these plastic surgeries, like a bigger butt or like boobs, and like, you'll get more likes. And that's like, I can't do that. It's like, it's so sexist to me.
It is. It definitely, like, social media just plays more the big name influencers. They all play into, I don't know if they know it, but they all play into the misogynistic views of, and again, this also is like low-key ableist, of the able-bodied white woman who's skinny. And yeah, the skinny, able-bodied white woman is what the Instagram, YouTube beauty standards hold us up to. And it's dumb. It's a boatload of absolute trash. I've come to the point where I'm like, is anybody gonna address this? Like, how messed up that is? Like, and especially like with what I talk about on my Instagram with the ableist, like the ableism just feeding into it, that like, it's all like sad that just because they're like healthy and able-bodied means that they're going to end up feeding into the beauty standards. It's so, so dumb.
But think of all the lights they get and all the opportunities that we would like dream to have.
Yeah, like, but it shouldn't be that much harder for us to get those opportunities. Like, it shouldn't. It's That's just not, that's not how this should work.
I mean, to me, it kind of made me like more motivated to like keep going and like,
yeah,
prove that you don't need to have like plastic surgery or these insane beauty standards to be verified. But there's a good number, but like there are people that are like disabled and they have high following too.
Yeah, that's true. It's harder to find the same number of disabled verified people on Instagram than it is like able body, sucks.
Yeah, definitely. It's just I think like a big thing is luck too.
Yeah, which again is sad, but I think it's just, if you're putting in purpose into it and you put luck aside, there's a lot of conversations that need to be had at places like Instagram and Facebook and Google.
It's not the conversation, it's just what people are more interested in. Like I post like a video like my life story and it's like I get 120 likes and this girl, I post a bikini photo, I think 400 likes, 300 comments. Like,
yeah, it's just what I mean by the conversations they should have is how their algorithm plays into it, because their algorithm only factors so many things, and that's just, it's more so the, and it's feeding into what people like because it's showing them what they want.
I mean no one can deny like a pretty person though.
That's true, but also yeah, like there's only so much beauty standard. So there's only so much of a healthy beauty standard, you know. If you're going to project beauty standards onto people, at least make it seem like that's not the only, that's not the only option that they have.
It's like a weird, like they're like, if you're a person that's like good looking or whatever, and you're good looking and you have those perks, like, and you're exploiting it, you can't blame them though. They're just like, they're just using them to their advantage.
I mean, I guess that's true.
Like if I had that kind of body and such, hell yeah, I'd be posting like pictures every day, like shirtless and all these cool things. Like, it's like if I was in their case, I would be like doing whatever they're doing. Like I would be part of the problem. It may sound bad, but like there's so much you can like fight against, but instead of join the wave and benefit yourself.
I guess there's only so much you can do, but I don't know. It's different across the board.
Yeah. You gotta unfollow everyone that's extremely good looking, that you said looks for only.
Yeah. Like, it came to the point where it's like, do I follow because they're pretty, or do I unfollow because it's affecting, for me it's more of a mental health thing, like comparison is like my worst enemy. So that's why, like, that's the root of my strong opinions about beauty standards.
I'll follow like a pretty girl, like that's had a high following, but they have to be like entertaining though.
Yeah,
but I can't like just do one of the selfies or just show off their body, like that's not gonna, I need like some like humor or like entertaining stuff. Like, yeah, it's great to look at it like a nice body, but like I need some kind of like mental stimulant. That helps a lot too.
On the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah, we talked about that too much.
You're fine. So my last question for you is, why do you want to share your rare disease story?
Well, I want to be verified by Instagram. So like one way is to share your story. And, you know, like we were talking about it earlier that like no one knows who I am. And so like, how do you have people know who you are? So you got to make videos and like, you know, one of my, you know, like I post like a lot of good videos and such. And like, I can't understand that that's like enough. Interesting to watch 20-minute video of like my time in college. I'm like, I get it, but like and a lot, like, I'm thinking my YouTube career in the long run. So, like, in the beginning, like, my videos were crappy. Like, I had crappy lighting. I didn't have a good camera. My storytelling wasn't that great. You know, like, what, like, kind of learn what people do like or what they don't like. So, like, I'm getting slowly better and better. And hopefully my betterness will attract more people and they'll be more willing to watch and engage my videos. But, like, at the same time, it's like I also have the creative outlet that I want to fulfill, and I love to make the videos and have a personality and just to be like out, throw myself out there and have people notice me. And I can't, it's hard to do that when you're in a wheelchair. And I feel like my life would be a lot different if I wasn't disabled and I was able to go out more often, but I can't. So that kind of fulfilling that inner me to make the videos and make the jokes and, you know, like it's weird. Like, I like to work with content, but be in a boss kind of way. Like, what can I do with something to make something funny? Like, I'm really into improv. So, like, I just bounced all over the place and everywhere and have my creative mind to go everywhere. Mm-hmm. But what's difficult about me is that I'm so limited for one, on my body. I'm also limited about from the people around me, because if they say no, that I want to do something, and I can't say no, then I can't do it. So, like, if I say, hey, I want to go to see the water, and someone, and let's say my parents, they don't want to take me, you know, they can't take me. So, like, I have, like, this inner wild spirit that I have to release, but I can't release it because I'm not surrounded by the people that share that same sentiment as I do. Mm-hmm. And that's really frustrating to me.
Okay, interesting aspect. And are there any last thoughts you want to share before we wrap up?
I mean, I think the big thing is, I think it applies to everyone, but it's just work on yourself and be secure in yourself, because you are the only one that you live with for the rest of your life. And I mean, there's people out there that are not unhappy with themselves and they can go out in the world and be fine. But I think if you're secure with yourself, I think that could translate into terms of more of a medium happiness life, and you won't be deeply affected by it. But I think another thing is just think about those things you're doing in a way, and just try to be cognitive about your actions and be realistic with people and such. Because I think like especially in the rare disease community, or I mean, it could be applied to any person, but in the rare disease community, experience is lacking sometimes. Like, for like a big thing is like relationships. Like, you know, like the more you learn about like life, the better you are to judge people. But if you're limited by your experiences, your judgment could be really bad about other people. And I kind of see that sometimes in the rare disability community, or people that are not that social and they like lack that experience. And now, like, when you're younger, it's okay because everyone's kind of on the same level. But now that when you're approaching your 30s, you can tell more about like who is more mature and who's more aware of their surroundings and how they act and such, and how they talk to people. Like, what language are they using? Like, what words do they use to, you know, what words they use to comfort you, or how do they comfort you? Like, do they treat you as equal? Because I'm 28, so I had my 27 years to learn about experience of what makes me happy, what makes me feel secure. So I'm more knowing what does, but versus when I was 18, I really didn't know. All I had with my parents, and I realized that my parents' way of thinking is not, I don't think it's mentally great at all. So I have to find my own mental place for myself, and then also have to find mental people that are similar to me, so I can continue that strong mental health of, and the positivity, the emotional intelligence, just like good thing that can be relatable to me. So I don't have to tell a person how to take care of me. It's more like I They just know because I'm friends with them and I know them, instead of me having to explain to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great final message. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you.
Of course. Everyone go follow Joey on Instagram. I will leave all of his stuff in the show notes and his information where you can reach him. And also, if you don't know already, I will be doing an interview with, I don't know when the interview will be out, but I will end up posting about it. I have had an interview with Joey on his podcast, Two Mics, One Joey Suit.
Yes.
So whenever that comes out, I will be posting it like crazy, and he probably will as well. But that will come out.
It'll be a little while,
but it has been recorded and it's in the works. So I will let you all know on Instagram when that happens. But to all my listeners out there, be sure to subscribe to Art Is So Rare on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to follow me on Instagram at Art Is So Rare Podcast. And see you guys all next Thursday. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.